You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Kim Hahn.
And I'm Benedict Jones. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, August 2nd, 2018.
We citizens and the state of Indiana need to give to them in order to do their job, but to have the time to get the training so that they know how to carry out the law.
Governor Eric Holcomb has pledged his support for the enactment of bias crime legislation in 2019. But local activist John Clower has been lobbying for better hate crime laws in the state for a year. And he says supporting law enforcement is the key. WFHB Assistant News Director Sarah Vaughn brings us that story in today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks community members if Monroe County Community School Corporation should implement a metal detector program. That's coming up later in the program, but first, your daily headlines.
Global warming is already reducing crop yields in Indiana. According to a new report from the Purdue Climate Change Research Center, warmer overnight temperatures have reduced crop yields by 2%. For Indiana's $31 billion agriculture sector, that 2% equals $620 million. The Purdue Climate Change Research Center's latest report came out on Tuesday. The center estimates that Indiana's corn yields will reduce by 20% in the 2050s. Today's report also puts mid-century estimates of soybean yields to decline by 9 to 11%. The Purdue Climate Change Research Center's report also estimates a shorter and more mild winter across the state, but estimates that a wetter spring will limit the extent of the growing season. The center also estimates that global climate change will negatively impact livestock and poultry in Indiana. Hotter summers are expected to increase the fatalities of animals at confined feeding operations. Free-range beef, pork, and poultry is expected to face decreasing foraging options as plants grow less fibrous. The Purdue Climate Change Research Center's study is available on their website, ag.purdue.edu.
The U.S. Department of Labor is attempting to get more women into traditionally male-dominated trades. The Department of Labor is offering grants to both recruit female applicants into apprenticeship programs. The goal is to help women get into careers in industries such as manufacturing, construction, and cybersecurity, where they are underrepresented. The Women in Apprenticeship and Non-Traditional Occupations grants will provide close to $1 million this year to community organizations that get women into apprenticeships or non-traditional skills training programs. The Department of Labor grants also aims to set up support groups for women to improve employment retention and provide ongoing orientations to create an environment for women to succeed. U.S. Secretary of Labor Alexander Acosta says, "We must continue our efforts to maximize opportunities for women to enter apprenticeship programs and secure good, family-sustaining jobs," unquote. While women account for more than half of all workers in industry sectors such as education, health services, leisure and hospitality, and finance, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reports they make up less than half the workers in manufacturing, agriculture, transportation, utilities, mining, and construction.
Ball State University will no longer require applicants to submit SAT or ACT scores. Ball State is the first public university in Indiana to announce the change. Applicants can now choose whether or not to submit SAT or ACT scores. Ball State President Jeffrey Mearns said in a press release that the school will increasingly depend on high school grade point averages to judge applicants. Ball State also cited research that shows after public universities become test optional, they see applications increase 11%, an increase in graduation rates, and more diversity within student population. Ball State currently enrolls approximately 22,000 students. Other public universities in the state have announced they are not considering moving to a test optional application process.
The Indiana Department of Natural Resources released new hunting and trapping regulations yesterday. The DNR's Hunting and Trapping Guide is available for free on their website, in.gov/DNR. The 48-page guide includes rules and regulations regarding hunting and also features articles on the Grasslands, Game Birds, and Songbirds Initiative, two new surveys for deer hunters, Hunters Funding Conservation and Recreation, Managing Quail at Goose Pond Fish and Wildlife Area, and more.
U.S. Senators from Indiana Joe Donnelly and Todd Young's office passed a resolution last night honoring the crew of the USS Indianapolis. The Senate unanimously passed a bill last night awarding the crew of the USS Indianapolis with congressional gold medals, the highest civilian recognition the U.S. Congress can award. July 30th marked the 73rd anniversary of the ship's sinking in World War II. The Indianapolis was sunk after delivering uranium for the atomic bomb Little Boy to Tinian Island. The World War II-era heavy cruiser was later torpedoed by a Japanese submarine and sunk in 12 minutes. Nearly 1,000 crew members survived for 3.5 days in shark-infested waters before they were found by a Navy search plane. The sinking of the Indianapolis resulted in the highest number of shark attacks in recorded history. In a written statement issued today, Senator Donnelly said, quote, "The men of the crew of the USS Indianapolis are American heroes. I am pleased that the Senate has passed the bipartisan legislation I introduced with Senator Young to honor these brave Americans, including the fewer than 20 living survivors with the Congressional Gold Medal. I am hopeful that the House of Representatives will act quickly to get this measure to the President's desk and give these men the recognition they are due," unquote. Senator Todd Young also issued a statement after the passage of his and Senator Donnelly's bill, reading, quote, "The crew of the USS Indianapolis served our country with tremendous bravery, and most of them paid the ultimate price for our freedom and security. This Congressional Gold Medal will be an appropriate and important way to honor them," unquote.
The Monroe County Youth Services Bureau announced today the dates for their third annual Monroe County Childhood Conditions Summit. The summit is scheduled for Thursday, December 6th at the Monroe County Convention Center. The summit, which is prepared along with the support from Building a Thriving, Compassionate Community, is accepting workshop proposals through September 7th. Stephanie Solomon, the Monroe County Youth Services Bureau, says previous Monroe County Childhood Conditions Summits have attracted over 200 participants.
We believe it's our connections to others and to resources that protect us and our children from a host of health and social problems. We're excited to look at what makes us connected to our school system, what makes us connected to each other, how do we stay intergenerationally connected, and how can those relationships really build the strongest possible community here in Monroe County.
The Monroe County Youth Service Bureau is currently taking opinions as to residents' priorities, concerns, and ideas for action related to the theme of connections. YSB is conducting a community survey Wednesday, August 22nd from 4:30 to 6 p.m. at Butler Park to shape content for the big event. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Kim Hahn.
And I'm Benedict Jones. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograph and Ben Niehoff. Slotograph Niehoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life. providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or at slowtographnehoff.legal.com. Slow to Graf Niehoff, law for business, community, and life.
Governor Eric Holcomb has pledged his support for the enactment of bias crime legislation in 2019. But local activist John Clower has been lobbying for better hate crime laws in the state for years. And he says supporting law enforcement is key. WFHB Assistant News Director Sarah Vaughn brings us that story in today's feature report.
A few days ago, Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb committed himself to helping enact hate crime legislation in the 2019 General Assembly. Governor Holcomb says he'll meet with, quote, lawmakers, legal minds, corporate leaders, and citizens of all stripes who are seeking to find consensus on this issue, unquote, reports the Northwest Indiana Times. Retired teacher and Bloomington activist John Clower has been lobbying for stronger hate crime legislation for several years now. He says Indiana's existing law, Indiana Code 10-13-338, only focuses on the reporting of bias crimes. He says the state law is not only lacking, but poorly implemented.
According to the law, every police unit in the state is supposed to at least twice a year report the incidents of bias, of any bias crimes in their jurisdiction to the Indiana State Police, and the Indiana State Police aggregate all that information and send it to the FBI, and they put it up on the FBI puts it up on its website, so it's publicly available to anyone to take a look at the results of the bias crime reporting of the various police forces around the state. And the format for reporting is supposed to follow the FBI's format, and unfortunately, The law passed in the year 2000 did not include a penalty for noncompliance and did not require training on how to identify and report bias crimes, much less any funding to support training of police officers in how to identify and report bias crimes.
Clower's research leads him to question why so many policing entities around the state have not complied with the hate crime reporting law or have complied only sporadically.
So you do have certain municipalities in our area that have never filed a bias crime report in the 16 years from 2000 to 2016, which is the period that we have access to the information about on the FBI website. And then you've got other localities that have filed reports some years and then not other years, or entire sequence of several years they haven't complied with the law. And on the other end of the spectrum, you've got a police force like the city of Bloomington's, where from the very first year they followed the law, and they reported believable, persuasive data. That is to say, they didn't report 0000 for 16 years. They actually reported numbers. So, according to a conversation I had with Bloomington Police Chief Mike Dekoff, the Bloomington Police Force's the very fine performance of Bloomington Police Force in terms of complying with the state law is a result of the fact that it's easy to comply with the law, and according to Mike Dekoff, it has always been felt to be the right thing to do.
Clower notes that Indiana Code doesn't provide any penalties for policing agencies that don't report. He's also concerned that law enforcement doesn't get the training needed to properly identify bias crimes at the scene.
A crime scene involving a woman based on gender bias might not be determinable the same way that a bias crime on the basis of race would be. So we need to know not only if the police force have the training, but what kind of training, whether the training is adequate. We need to know if there are simply logistical difficulties for them to get the training, let's say in some of the very small police forces that have to have somebody on duty, what kind of assistance we need, that we citizens and the state of Indiana need to give to them in order to do their jobs, but to have the time to get the training so that they know how to carry out the law. And there is also a question of whether there needs to be an agency designated to enforce compliance with the law.
The legislature's Interim Study Committee on Corrections in the Criminal Code has been asked to study bias crimes this summer. Representative Thomas Washburn chairs that committee. I spoke with him recently about whether the committee would take up these issues of law enforcement reporting and training.
We're going to look at the how the law enforcement is trained and their education related to the recognizing and responding to bias-motivated crimes. And, you know, to the extent that that shows an issue, I think, you know, legislators will be introducing bills at the next session. Those will be prepared in the fall. This study committee, it'd be unlikely that we would produce a PDF. We haven't been charged with doing that, produce a bill draft for this particular problem or potential problem. But the work that we do would lay the predicate for any legislator that wants to introduce something.
Indiana's Republican-controlled legislature has failed several times to pass comprehensive hate crime legislation. As recently as last year, a hate crimes bill couldn't make it out of the Senate. Clower thinks focusing new legislation on supporting law enforcement could be the winning approach. Having data that supports the need for strengthened laws could help win over dissenting lawmakers. He says this tactic would be better than focusing on simply increasing penalties for bias crimes committed.
In addition, we need to have a good sense in terms of scholarship on bias crime, enhanced penalty bias crimes, about whether there is in fact a deterrent effect. So far, I have asked around and read around, and I have not found so far solid evidence that there is a deterrent effect for an enhanced penalty bias crime law. And we know that when you put somebody in prison and when you enhance their penalty, there is collateral damage for the family members of that person on the outside. So let's think about a law that reflects our seriousness about dealing with the issue, and that is not merely symbolic, and that doesn't have a lot of unintended consequences. So at this point, I actually think a strengthened reporting law, with the results being widely publicized and regularly, that is annually, for the citizens in the various communities in Indiana, might have a greater potential for handling the problem positively.
According to Clower, a bias crimes coalition is being formed locally with plans for a strong lobbying effort in support of bias crime legislation this fall. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
Support for WFHB comes from listeners like you and from IU Health Foundation, where local gifts stay local, serving patients for a healthier Bloomington.
Support also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington-based business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next is our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
The state of Indiana is releasing funds for school districts to purchase metal detectors. The program, championed by Governor Eric Holcomb, allots one handheld metal detector for every 250 students. Voices in the Street asks listeners whether they believe Monroe County Community School Corporation should implement the program.
It's a bunch of crap. I teach in not a public school system, but in a community college system. I just don't think that it makes anybody feel safer. I just think that it makes people feel more afraid. It makes me, as an educator, feel more afraid rather than less afraid.
I don't know a lot about other schools. I just know about the schools that my grandchildren have gone to, and I don't see a reason for it. These children are very low-key. I don't see any danger in these schools.
I mean, general security is always a concern, but I think it's kind of a tedious task to check every single student as they enter the building. I feel like there's got to be better ways about going about this.
No, I don't think it's going to be very helpful, but not because we should sit around and do nothing, but there's, I can think of 149 reasons why that may not work in keeping guns out of school. And since that, I'm sure that they're also, as they're, you know, spending money on the technology of metal detecting wands is what they are, they're probably also, invested in 3D printing, which is a new hot technology. You can go and pay a little money and print out. Now we know guns. So what does it matter if you can just make one right in the school out of plastic?
Yeah, I think there's advantages and disadvantages right to it. I think it could make kids feel safe, and it could also make them more scared than they normally would be.
I don't think it's a great idea. I don't think they're going to be that effective. Of course, they have plastic guns now.
I personally think it'll help. I don't know how probability that is. Like, I feel like that's kind of insane to go up to every student and do that, but I definitely think that's a step in the right direction as far as trying to keep our students safe, because it has become a problem.
It's like if a kid is really motivated to do something like that, they would probably find a way around it, like if they were really thinking about it. I mean, yeah, it might help someone who's impulsive or who's like not thinking through what they're doing, but if someone was thinking through what they're doing, they might try to find a way to do something anyway. And then I think just, you know, the cost of it, and then just the effects that it could have mentally on the other children, I just don't really see that there would be a huge benefit, or if it would really even be all that preventative.
My kids go to school at Harmony here in town, and they've never had issues with students bringing weapons in that. So I would think it's a cultural thing. And I don't know if this is just a knee-jerk reaction to the stuff going on in the country right now with regards to school shootings and stuff like that. So beyond that, you know, I don't know. The city also spent a whole bunch of money on a tank that I don't think they need. So
I feel like trying to cure the symptom of a problem without really trying to get to the root at it, I think is more distressing, you know? So it's like, it's the quick fix, but it's all really temporary and short term. You know, I wish there was more money and more mental health resources and more counseling and people really addressing, you know, toxic masculinity. That would be a lot more, I think, useful and beneficial in the long run, and people would at least feel more complete, more whole as human beings instead of locked down. You know, if you turn the schools into prisons, what are we going to be producing? Not citizens, you know?
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Voices in the Street was produced by Jenna Jankowski. Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Kim Hahn. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glab, a WFHB news and public affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.